Good evening. I hope everyone had a good afternoon. It was beautiful weather out there, and I hope you at least got to enjoy just a little bit of it. Our topic for the night is Genesis chapter 24, and I want to take it in a different perspective a little bit. As I read through it for the last couple of weeks, I've read it multiple times, and it just kept standing out in my mind about a father's love. And so tonight, I want to ask a couple questions for you to consider as we go through this lesson. What is it that we want for our children? You ever stop to think about that? What is it that we want for our children? What is it we hope for our children? After just getting back from a family vacation, which is always fun, especially when you take the kids to a theme park, and it's rambunctious, it's high energy everywhere, and the kids are worn out, and they're tired and cranky, and you start to wonder, what is it we really want for our children, or what is it that we hope for our children? And I think it's the same across the spectrum, especially when you sit there and you watch different families from different places, different backgrounds, and you really kind of start to mesh things together. And as I was thinking about this lesson and then consequently looking at it through this lens, what is it that we truly want for our children? I think most parents want their children to grow up feeling safe, feeling secure. I think we want them to have dreams. And not only just dreams, but we hope that they have ambitions. We hope that they set goals. We hope that they pursue those goals. But there's more than just the physical aspects of life. For most of us that are Christians, we also hope that our children have faith. And we hope that they pursue that faith, that they understand their faith, and they continually fight for their faith, and they continually try to grow their faith. But we also hope that they remain faithful. And then we also, I think as most parents, we hope that they find someone that they can build a life with, someone that can accompany them throughout their life, somebody that they can lean on, somebody that they can trust, somebody that can love them and fulfill them. And that's sometimes a hard part for us as parents, isn't it? Especially as a father of three daughters, you start thinking about that, and sometimes it's scary. I know I've joked that they won't ever get married. They can't date until I'm at least 70, so that would put them at least 40 or 50. If they want to start dating at 60, I'm okay with that. But we know that that's not going to happen. E has already looked at me and said, "Dad, I know you're crazy." And that's true. And sometimes we worry about those things. What is their life going to be like? You know, what kind of boys are they going to bring home? And as Letha says, you're not really scary enough. I don't know why she says that. I thought I was pretty scary looking, but maybe I'm not. She said that's what the grandfathers and the uncles are for, and all our friends and also our big dogs are for, is to scare the boys off, maybe. Not me. But either way, these are some of the things I think that we look at that we hope for our children. But the other side of that is not only what do we hope for and want for our children, but do our children actually know what we hope and want for them? Do we tell them? Do they see that in our lives? Do they see that we hope for these things for them? That what we want for them is, in the end, something good for them. And maybe not even something good, but something great for them. Do they see that we're trying to pass along these pearls of wisdom. And as, you know, as people, as teenagers or younger teenagers, you know, mom and dad are kind of stupid, at least in their mind. And as they grow older, they start to realize we are a little more smarter than we let on. But do our children understand that? And as children, as our teenagers over here on this side, do you understand what your parents want for you? Have you seen what your parents hope for you? And are you learning from them? That's some of the things that has really stood out in my mind. And as we look through Genesis chapter 24 and the life of Abraham and his son Isaac, we're going to see some of these things. And I hope to pull some of these things out. But I think a lot of this comes to fruition in chapter 24 of Abraham's life. You see, I think the first thing we see is Abraham's faith. That's the one first thing that we notice about Abraham from chapter 12 through chapter 24 is his faith. But not only his faith, but how he instills it in other people. And as parents, we need to teach our children that faith and instill it in them as well. But not only that, I think the second thing we see in Abraham's life is the love that he has for his family. And when we think about that, does our children see the love that we have for them? Or do they just see mom and dad getting on to them? Do they just see the punishment? Or do they see the fun in it? But the main thing is, do they see the love? And the last thing that I want us to look at is not only the Abraham's faith and his love and with his family, but his complete and utter trust in God. And I think that's the three things that we see come to fruition in chapter 24. You see, the first thing is that we notice about Abraham, if you look at Genesis chapter 12, is his faith. You see, in Genesis chapter 12, Abram, as it is called by God. And he says, I want you to get up and get out of this land. Get out of your father's house and go to a land that I will show you. His faith starts being tested because he is, at this point in time, 75 years old. And that is something to really take into account for. That'd be... Now, unfortunately, they lived a little bit longer in those days, so 75 might have been today's 40. But at 75 years old, God calls Abram to get up and get out of his father's house and to go to a land that he will show you, a land that you do not know, but I will show you. And through Abraham's faith in God, he goes. But not only along with that, God tells him, says, if you go, I'm going to bless you and make you great. But not only that, I'm going to bless those who bless you, and I'm going to curse those who curse you. So we see that his faith in God is to understand that God is going to bless us along our journey as long as we have faith in him. So we see that in chapter 12 of Genesis, but even Hebrews tells us in Hebrews 11 that by faith Abraham went. Abraham was obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he would receive as an inheritance. But not only that, he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for a city which foundation and whose builder and maker is God. How many times today would you go somewhere where you've never been without knowing where you're going? As Jeffrey pointed out, we trust and rely on our GPSs. That's a big thing. As we were coming back in, even as we were traveling, the first thing we looked at was our GPS. Before we even pulled out of the driveway, even though we knew the way to go, we pulled up GPS because we wanted to check the routes, to check for traffic conditions, to check for wrecks, And along the way back, we kept that going, and we were able to bypass several areas of wrecks. But along the way, on our way down, maybe we got blessed because little Anna Mae had to go to the bathroom, so we had to pull off and spend an extra 20 minutes at a stop that we didn't plan on because we had just used the bathroom 30, 40 minutes earlier, and all of a sudden I got to use the bathroom, so we pull off. And had we not, there was a tornado just down the road, and we would have probably been caught up right in the middle of a tornado on our way traveling. So that 20-minute stop may have saved us from being in the middle of that. We don't know. But by faith, it says Abram went to a place that he didn't know, and he dwelt there. So not only did he have faith to get up and to go to a place that he didn't know, but he had faith over and over again in God through everything that God told him to do. And along the way, God promised to him a son. He promised this heir, this son, through his wife, Sarah. And at that point in time, he was getting older and more advanced in years. And he was waiting for this promised son, and it still wasn't happening. But he continued to have faith in God, and at 100 years old, he finally receives this promise of a son through his wife, Sarah, and he named him Isaac. So we see the faith that he had to wait on this promised son and to understand that God told him that his heirs would be as numerous as the sand on the seashore. And he said, "How can that be if I don't have a child?" But that he still had the faith to keep that in mind. But not only that, when we see that later on, after he had that son and had brought him up, God asked him to offer his only son as a burnt offering, to really test him. And I love the faith that he has, because God says, "I want you to go and offer your only son and to offer him as a burnt sacrifice to me." And he gets up and he goes. He takes three servants with him. He has the wood and he has his son. And he travels out to the Mount Moriah, which is kind of neat as I was studying through this. And Mount Moriah is very close to the site where Jerusalem is going to be. So it's very well foreshadowing that God is going to send his son to also be sacrificed around that same area there in Jerusalem. So we see a lot of foreshadowing in this and the faith that he had to pick up and to tell his son, "Let's go and worship God together. Let us travel a 3 days journey to Mount Moriah." And as they are getting close, he tells his servants, "You wait here while the lad and I go yonder to worship." But I think the kicker to show that his faith is, he says, "And we will return to you." We see the faith that Abraham has. But not only that, after he starts to go, and I can only imagine Isaac's thoughts around this, because him and his father, Abraham, are going up the mountain to worship God. They've got the fire. They have the wood for the fire. And Isaac looks at his dad and goes, "Dad, where is our sacrifice?" And Abraham looks at his son and says, "Son, the Lord will provide." And they go on and they build the altar, and he lays his son upon the altar, and he draws his knife back, and an angel of the Lord stops him and says, "I see that you have not withheld your only son from me." And he looked up, and a ram was caught by its horns in the thicket. And there Abraham and Isaac built an altar and said, "They will name this place, 'The Lord will provide.'" I can only imagine the faith through that circumstance that it provided for Isaac to see that Abraham had faith in God, and he should as well. But in Hebrews 11, it goes on to conclude that Abraham concluded that God was able to raise him up even from the dead. Even if he did offer him as a sacrifice, Abraham had so much faith that God was going to raise him from the dead, even if he had to sacrifice his son. Because, he says, from which he also received him from a figurative sense. He received that son, and Isaac, at an old age, an age where he was past the years of bearing children. So he says, even in a figurative sense, he already received him from the dead. So we see that he had tremendous amount of faith, and he instills that in Isaac. But not only that, we see that faith instilled even in his household. If you would, open up to Genesis chapter 24. That's where we're going to start at. It says in verse 1, "Now Abraham was old, he was well advanced in years, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. So Abraham said to the oldest servant of his house, who ruled over all that he had, he said, 'Please put your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell. But you shall go to my country and to my family and take a wife for my son Isaac.' And the servant said to him, 'Perhaps the woman will not be willing to follow me to this land. Must I take your son back to the land from which you came?' But Abraham said to him, 'Beware that you do not take my son back there. The Lord God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my family, and who spoke to me and swore to me, saying, "To your descendants, I give you this land," he will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. And if a woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be released from this oath. Only do not take my son back there.' So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter." So we see the servant, Abraham, is instilling this sense of faith in him. He's putting faith in this servant to go into this land and find him a wife. Find his son a wife. And the servant's a little nervous. And I could only imagine what that would be like to find a bride for your master's son who he feels very strongly about. And he says, "God will be with you." And he keeps instilling faith, so much so that the servant took 10 of his master's camels, departed for all his master's goods were in his hand, and he arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. And he made the camels kneel down outside the city by a well of water at evening time, about the time that women would go out to draw water. And he said, and he was praying, "O Lord, my God, of my master Abraham, please give me success this day and show kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, here I stand by the well of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now let it be that the young woman to whom I say, 'Please let down your pitcher that I may drink,' and she says, 'Drink,' I will also give to your camels a drink. Let her be the one you have appointed for your servant Isaac. And by this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master." He was praying to God to help him along his journey, to bless him in this finding a bride for his son Isaac. And verse 15 of it shows God's response. "And it happened before he even finished speaking, that behold, Rebekah, who was born to Bethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, came out with her pitcher on her shoulder. And the young woman was very beautiful to behold, a virgin that no man had ever known. And she went down to the well, filled her pitcher, and came up. And the servant ran to meet her and said, 'Please, let me drink a little water from your pitcher.' So she said, 'Drink, my lord.' Then she quickly let her pitcher down to her hand and gave him a drink. And when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, 'I will also draw water for your camels, so they can drink until they have finished drinking.' And she quickly emptied her pitcher into the trough and ran back to the well to draw water and drew up for all his camels. You see, Abraham had this faith in God that he instilled not only to his family, but to all those he came into contact with. But not only that, we see the love that he had for his family. Even before Abraham was called by God to go out to this land, in chapter 11, we see that his brother had passed away and he had taken Lot to raise as one of his own. And not only that, but as he left, he took Lot with him. And time again, his love for not only his family, but for all those around him came out as a big standing point. Even when they were traveling and all the herdsmen and all the camels were and all their cattle and everything was fighting for the land, Abraham went to Lot and said, "Let there be no enmity between us. But I'll let you choose which way to go. And you choose and I will go the other way." It was out of love and respect that he allowed Lot to choose a place to go. And he went the opposite direction. But then again, after Lot chose the plains towards Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot gets swept up and taken captive during a war, and Abraham goes to his rescue again. But not only that, he continually asked for help for Lot even before Sodom and Gomorrah got destroyed, and continued to love his family. Even his other son, by Sarah's handmaiden, he continually looked out for him. Even when Sarah, in chapter 21, asked for him to send them away because Isaac was now his heir by his wife, she said, "Send them away." And in verse 11 of chapter 21, it says, "And this matter was very displeasing in Abraham's sight because of his son. But God said to Abraham, 'Do not let it be displeasing in your sight because of the lad or because of your bondwoman. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice, for in Isaac your seed shall be called.'" Even though this wasn't the promised son that God had promised him, he still loved him. And he still shows his love toward him and says, in verse 14, "So Abraham arose early in the morning, took bread and a skin of water. Putting it on her shoulder, he gave it to her and the boy to Hagar and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness." You see, Abraham's love for his family is shown time and time again. And it's even shown after Sarah's death that he knew he wanted his son Isaac to be taken care of. But he didn't want any of the people of the land that he was living in to be part of that. He wanted somebody from his family to be a part of that. So he sent the servant. And the servant was blessed in his journey. And he puts that servant in charge of finding his son a wife to take care of him, to watch out for him, and to be his ultimate companion. But I think the biggest thing that we see, not only is his faith and his love for his family, but his ultimate trust in God. He ultimately trusted in God for everything, to know that God was in control. And so many times, I think we forget that, don't we? I think we, through everything that has happened, and I look back and I really started thinking about this, is ultimately we should know that God is in control. I look back at my life and all the things that I've seen in my 39 short years here on this earth. You know, everybody may remember the Space Shuttle Challenger. I still remember watching that take off and then unfortunately exploding. I remember seeing the Braves win the World Series the first time and now the second time. I've seen many different things. Even 9/11, when it happened, I was at Tech. And I didn't know anything that happened until I got to my second class, because I was already sitting in class when the planes had hit. It wasn't until I walked into my second class, which was accounting 212, and people were crying. All of a sudden, the teacher was 20 minutes late, and somebody sitting behind me said, "Hey, I really found out what I'm going to write for my novel." And I said, "What's that?" And he goes, "I'm going to crash two planes in the World Trade Center." I said, "Man, that's crazy. Why would you write about that?" And he goes, "You haven't seen TV, have you? You hadn't heard the news." And by that time, the professor come in crying because his daughter was in the towers. And I remember seeing how people reacted all over the country and how people came together. We've seen a whole lot of things throughout our life, and even now with Russia and Ukraine, we need to know that God is ultimately in control. And He instills that trust in us today. Do our children see the faith, see the love, and understand that we put our ultimate trust in God? So some things that I think we can take away from the life of Abraham and the story of the servant finding Isaac a bride is, first and foremost, is to put our faith in God. When we teach our families about our faith in God, and when we teach others about our faith in God, we know that we can do all things because He strengthens us. In Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13, if we put our faith in Him, He gives us that strength to know that He is in control. And when we truly start growing in our faith, we understand that everything we're going through is for a reason. Sometimes we don't know that reason right then. I'll never forget my best friend growing up through school. He underwent 3 open heart surgeries. One as a baby, one in 5th grade, one in 6th grade. And I got to spend that time with him as he underwent some of those. And he never understood why he had to do that, other than he had a birth defect. But you know the crazy thing about it is, at 17 years old, 18 years old, I found out I had a birth defect as well and was going to have to undergo a similar surgery. Maybe he was put through that for a reason. And he was right there with me every step of the way. Even the night before surgery, he spent the night at the house to go with us. And he stayed in the hospital with us and was there every day throughout that. Sometimes we go through things for a reason so that we can help others out. And when we understand that, we start to pass that along. We start to teach that to others. In Romans chapter 8, we see that plays out. Starting in verse 3, it says, "For what the law could not do, in that it was weak through the flesh, God did by sending His own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh on the account of sin. He condemned sin in the flesh, that the righteous requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. For those who live according to flesh set their minds on things of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit." But it goes on in verse 10, "And if Christ is in you, the body is dead because of sin, but the Spirit is life because of righteousness. But if the Spirit of Him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, He who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through His Spirit who dwells in you. Therefore, brethren, we are debtors, not to the flesh, to live according to the flesh, for if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For as many are led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God." You see, when we put to death the flesh and put our faith in God through His Son, Jesus Christ, we have life eternal. And we see that over and over again, and that we know that good things will happen to us. Because He says over and over again in Romans 8 and verse 28, "And we know that all things work together for good for those that love the Lord and who are called according to His purpose." when you finish out chapter 24, that servant asked Rebekah to go with him back to his master's house and become the bride for his master's son Isaac. And she gladly accepts. And he goes and tells her brothers and her father, and they said, let her stay here for just a little bit longer. And then you come back. And he says, please don't hinder me from going with her, but let her come. And they said, well, we will ask her, and if she says yes, then she can go. And as the master servant asked her, she said, yes, I will go with you. And she and her maids loaded up on the camels that he took and went back. And in chapter 24, we see that as they are coming back into the land where Isaac is, he is out in the field. And she asks that master servant, she goes, who is that in the field? And he goes, that's my master's son, Isaac. She quickly puts a veil over her face and gets off her camel and goes to him. And he gladly takes her by the hand and takes her into Sarah's tent and makes her his wife. We see the faith that Abraham instilled in him. We see the love that he had for his family. And we see the ultimate trust that he had in God. And we need to make sure that we pass that along, because this world is not going to last. Even Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount said not to put your faith in the things of this world, where moth and rust destroy, but to put your faith in heaven above, in treasures that do not rust and do not be taken away. You see, in Psalms chapter 145 and verse 13, he says, your kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. Your dominion endures throughout all generations, and the Lord is trustworthy in all his promises and is faithful in all he does. When we understand that God is the ultimate, where we ultimately need to put our trust, we can understand that we need to pass that to everybody we come into contact with. As Christians, we are called to go into the world and make disciples. We need to do that through our families and through our children and through all that we come into contact with. So the question tonight is your faith in God? Is your love for your family being shown? And is your ultimate trust in God? If not, why not? If there's anything that we can do for you, maybe you need to put Christ on in baptism. Everything is prepared. Everything is ready. Or maybe if you've fallen away and need prayers of encouragement and strength, we can do that for you too. We'd love to do that. And remember that the invitation is not only open just now, but open at any point in time. If there's anything any of us can do, please come as we stand and as we sing.